G-88, ICA headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. As Tara's effort to keep something explosive to herself essentially left Dan by himself to fend off William Godfrey's articulate calls for more information, the ICA chairman stepped up his argument. "And don't forget, Dan, I'm addressing the world before our meeting later in the day. I won't give anything away, you know that. But this goes back to the old strategy Emma knows just as well as I do, of making sure we don't say something that could be embarrassingly or even dangerously out of date all too quickly. I don't want to put my foot in a pile of shit I can avoid, if you'll pardon my French. Everyone knows something bad has happened on New Kerguelen, and I need to know what." Initially, the general public's first knowledge that anything unfortunate had occurred or been discovered on New Kerguelen came from Clark McCarthy's unscripted speech at the Birchwood drive-in, delivered in the hours after Dan and Tara's return from New Kerguelen's outpost. All Clark had revealed was that the messengers found out some pretty sad things about their world and its history. But this was more than enough to send speculation running rampant as to what he might be referring to. The pressure for clarifying comments was immediately intense, but the fact that only the McCarthys and their inner circle knew what Clark was talking about ensured that nothing further leaked out. Although Clark came to regret his words when the likes of Godfrey and Slater, particularly frustrated to be left in the dark regarding what had happened on New Kerguelen, began badgering the family for updates, he nevertheless appreciated the trust Emma had put in him by encouraging him to address the world with Leisha at his side in the off-the-cuff manner he had. For her part, Emma was delighted with the passionate defense of the messengers that Clark provided, one which was sadly necessary given Leisha's recent killing of an assailant who attempted to assassinate both Clark and Godfrey. Godfrey, meanwhile, had been experiencing a newfound appreciation for both Clark and Leisha ever since their efforts to protect him during the shooting incident, and because of this, he had relented from seeking further updates before Dan was willing to give them. Throughout the past few weeks, as Godfrey alluded to, Dan had maintained that today would be the day when the new chairman learned everything. Despite this, or perhaps because of it, Dan was now altogether unsurprised to find the ICA chairman seeking a few hours' head start over the rest of the agency's senior figures. This didn't mean he wasn't disappointed, however, and certainly didn't mean he was going to talk. "I haven't decided how much I'm going to tell you all," Dan said, holding firm. "Like Clark said at the drive-in, this isn't our story to tell."
"So we're waiting for Leisha?" Godfrey asked. "Why isn't he here?"
The irony of this question, given that the alien had departed minutes earlier and literally while Godfrey's hand was on the doorknob, made it difficult for Dan to keep a straight face.
"Look, this doesn't have to be awkward, but I'd really appreciate it if you left us alone until the meeting," Dan said. "I've also decided I'm not going to be in front of the cameras when you speak, but we can maybe still address the media together after our meeting if we both think it makes sense. If." William Godfrey, a political titan used to having his own way and commanding the deferent respect of everyone in any given room, bit his tongue, as he so often had in recent years while dealing with Dan McCarthy. It endlessly wore away at Godfrey's ego that the messengers deemed Dan to be the most worthy point of contact, and that they'd plainly stated on multiple occasions that they would never engage with a contact-focused agency that excluded him. The two silver linings in Godfrey's mind had always been, firstly, that Dan was a broadly agreeable and non-egotistical kind of man, and secondly, that he wasn't a rival politician. Because of this second point, Godfrey was still able to position himself as executive chairman of the ICA, even while Dan took the ultimately supreme mantle of chief planetary liaison. Being the agency's sole chairman was far better than being a deputy planetary liaison, like Slater or Ding. And with this in mind, Godfrey kept himself sane by reminding himself that he was in competition with them, rather than with Dan, and that keeping Dan broadly on side was the way to ensure he kept winning. As it went, the only other politicians who Dan had invited to the high-level meeting Godfrey referenced were Valerie Slater and Ding Ziyang, with Turkish archaeologist Mesut Demir and a second Chinese man by the name
Zhao Chen, rounding out the table of seven along with Dan and Terra. Zhao had been the leader of Earth's small contingent on New Kerguelen, charged with restoring the messenger's supposedly protective great shelter before its utter needlessness had become apparent. Indeed, it was the work of Zhao's joint U.S.-Chinese crew that first revealed that the atmosphere on New Kerguelen's external surface was identical to that within the shelter. Even more importantly, Zhao's quick thinking had enabled a return to Earth to gather further equipment which enabled deeper investigation and ultimately led to the earth-shattering discovery of the second shelter Dan had come to know as the Architect's Outpost. Since the crew's return to Earth, news of the second shelter had understandably leaked. Since no one outside of Birchwood knew what was really inside that structure and indeed why any protective structures were present on New Kerguelen at all, the other leaders who had known about the second shelter before its existence became public knew better than to make any predictive comments about what its presence might signify. The likes of Godfrey and Slater detested being out of the loop, but they were all experienced enough to know that the one thing worse than appearing uncertain was feigning certainty about something that would soon be revealed in a manner that could quickly make their proclamations look very foolish indeed. Mere hours before going into a meeting with Slater and Ding, however, Godfrey was loath to let one last opportunity to inquire about the second shelter pass without a gentle attempt to coax some information from Dan. He did so in a relaxed way, stressing his view that Dan would make his own life easier by telling him now so that the experienced politician could prepare some supportive replies and assist Dan in dealing with whatever questions might arise from the often less agreeable President Slater in particular. "We talked about this," Dan said, trying to de-escalate the situation before Godfrey could switch tack. "It wouldn't be fair to the others, especially Zhao, who has kept quiet even when some of his crewmen talked and whose quick thinking is the only reason we were able to learn about the second shelter when we did. This is nothing personal, although to be completely honest, I am personally disappointed that you've come here to ask me this so soon before we go live." Godfrey appeared taken aback by Dan's final comment, one which Emma had encouraged him to lean upon to throw the ICA chairman off his stride if or when this predictable situation did come to pass. Rather than offended, Godfrey looked shocked and perhaps even somewhat embarrassed. "I'm sorry," he said, adopting a conciliatory tone he used on precious few people in any sphere of his life, and almost none in a professional or political context. "I do sincerely hope you'll reconsider, and I hope you don't consider it as any kind of slight if I reach out to Emma directly and explain my position to her, that I simply consider it wise to loop me in on this before I address the world." Dan shook his head. "I don't, and you can ask away, but it's a waste of time. She shares my view." Godfrey took a deep breath. "Be that as it may, I'll see you later today. And Terra, nice to see you as always." Terra nodded curtly, very evidently distracted as she had been throughout the entirety of Godfrey's brief visit. "Oh, and Dan," Godfrey called as he opened the door. "Don't let me forget to have someone see about this doorknob, okay? CPL McCarthy deserves a door that works first time every time." As soon as the door closed again behind Godfrey, Terra exhaled one of the deepest breaths of her life. "Look at your phone," she gulped. "There's a message from Clark." Dan wasted no time. He lifted the phone from his pocket with sudden urgency and glanced at the screen. The words hit him like a truck. "Are you with Leisha? If you are, Piper knows. She just said it." Silence circled the high corner office of the imposing ICA building. A cacophony of excitement filled the air outside as thousands marched in support of the new agency and in hope for the cooperative and collaborative future it could usher in. But the tense air between Dan and Terra could hardly have lain in starker contrast. In lieu of any verbal reaction, Dan walked immediately to the door and proceeded to lock it. Remaining silent, he then lifted the small fabric-like telepathy patch from his pocket and placed it on the back of his neck.
Tara pointed questioningly to her own pocket, but Dan shook his head. You don't need it. I'm just calling Leisha, he said. We're going home.